Nama Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Nama Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 16, entitled Praise of King Putu by the Professional Reciters, text number 19. Ayam tu sakshat bhagavam strayadisha. Ayam tu sakshat bhagavam strayadisha. Kutasta atma kalaya vitirna. Yasminna vidrachitam naratakam. Yasminna vidyarachitam niratakam. Pasyanti nanatvam api patitam. Ayam tu sakshat bhagavam stri adesha. Kutasta atma kalaya vat pritinam. Yasminna vidyarachitam niratakam. Pasyanti nanatvam api patitam. Vidyarachitam niratakam. Asyanti natatvam apipatitam. Ayam tu sakshat bhagavam strayadishad. Kutashta atma karaya vitirneha. Yasmina vidyarachitam niratakam. Pasyanti nanatvam api patitam. Ladies. Ayam tu sakshat bhagavam strayadisha. Kritasta atma kalayam vitirnam. Asmina vidyarachitam nirakam. Asyanti narakam api patitam. I am this king to them. Sakshat, directly, Bhagavan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Adisha, the Master of the Three Planetary Systems, Kutastha, without any change, Atma, the Supersoul, Kalaya, by the partial planetary expansion, Avatirna, descended. Yasmin, in whom? Avidyarachitam, created by nascence. Niratakam, without meaning. Pasyanti, they see. Nanatvam, material variegatedness. Api, certainly. Patitam, understood. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada ki. This king is the master of the three worlds and he is directly empowered by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He is without change and he is an incarnation of the Supreme known as Shaktyavesh Avatar. Being a liberated soul and completely learned, he sees all material varieties as meaningless because their basic principle is nascience. Purport. The reciters of these prayers are describing the transcendental qualities of Prithu Maharaj. These qualities are summarized in the words Shakshat Bhagavan. This indicates that Maharaj Prithu is directly the Supreme Personality of Godhead and therefore possesses unlimited good qualities. Being an incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Maharaj Prithu could not be equaled in his excellent qualities. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is fully equipped with six kinds of opulences. And King Prithu was also empowered in such a way that he could display these six opulences of the Supreme Personality of Godhead in full. The word Kutashta, meaning without change, is also very significant. There are two kinds of living entities, Nitya Mukta and Nitya Bada. A Nitya Mukta never forgets his position as the eternal servant of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. One who does not forget this position and knows that he is part and parcel of the Supreme Lord is Nitya Mukta. Such a Nitya Mukta living entity represents the Super Soul as his expansion. As stated in the Vedas, Nitya Nityanam. Thus, the Nitya Mukta living entity knows that he is an expansion of the Supreme Nitya, or the Eternal Supreme Personality of Godhead. Being in such a position, he sees the material world with different vision. The living entity who is Nityabada, or eternally conditioned, sees the material varieties as being actually different from one another. In this connection, we should remember that the embodiment of the conditioned soul is considered to be like a dress. One may dress in different ways, but a really learned man does not take dresses into consideration. As stated in the Bhagavad Gita, Vidya vinaya sampane brahmani gavani hastini suni chaivasa pakecha pandita samadashana. The humble sage, by virtue of true knowledge, sees with equal vision a learned and gentle brahman, a cow, an elephant, a dog, and a dog eater, outcast. Thus a learned man does not look upon the dresses that externally cover the living entity, but sees the pure soul within the varieties of dress, and knows very well that the varieties of dress are the creations of nascience, avidyarachitam. Being a Shaktivesh avatar empowered by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Prithu Maharaj did not change his spiritual position, and consequently there was no possibility of his viewing the material world as reality. Srila Prabhupada ki. Om Agyena Timiram Lasya Yanam Jana Shalaktaya Chakshu Malitam Jena Tasmai Sri Guru Vainamaha Vanchata Upatrubhyascha Kripa Shindu Vyayvacha Patitanam Bhavanibhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. Bhagavat Bhaparana Ki, Srila Prabhupada Ki. So in this northeastern part of India, we're in the northeast. It's interesting, Bangladesh is not an ordinary place. You see the holy rivers, if you study India from a spiritual sense or even from the point of science, spiritual science of Vastu, we see that water, if it comes from the northeast corner, then very auspicious that place would be. So water is stored in the north in the form of the Himalayas. Big blocks of ice are there. Great body of water is in the north. So wealth will be there. In the northeast, we have the biggest river in India comes in there. Brahmaputra. The Brahmaputra Nad. Nad means it's a male, masculine personality. That Brahmaputra, the son of Brahma, coming from all the way down the back of the Himalayas and comes, sweeps around into Bangladesh from the northeast. Very auspicious. And then coming along the front of the Himalaya, also from Kailash, from the greater massif of Himalaya, comes off all the rivers, all the holy rivers come off Mount Kailash, landing on the head of Lord Shiva. So that a feminine river, more than one, many feminine rivers are coming. Particularly the Ganga, Jamuna. So when you come around into Bangladesh, in particular, there's two big rivers meet, the Ganga, which is joined with the Jamuna, and the Brahmaputra. Ganga Nadi is called, you know. Ganga Nadi means feminine. So the feminine energy joining with the male energy. So we see is Bangladesh is a place of, or West Bengal is a place of great life, exuberance, great spiritual beneficence, and material gain is also there. It's called the rice bowl. It's called the rice bowl of India. So many grains are coming. So many minerals are coming with those rivers. So much auspiciousness. So, like that, we see when if we try and bring together these two topics of Leela and Tattva, or Rasa and Tattva, I've heard it said. Shravanam, by hearing, we can hear if you bring Leela and Tattva together, then something becomes very prolific. Something becomes very interesting, intriguing. If we join science with art, aesthetics and science together, something very wonderful. So I tried to prepare some small presentation based on these two principles. And the other day we heard from Sankarshan Nitai very nicely about the opulences of Prithu Maharaj, the Shaktivesh avatar. So the first part of the purport I feel he covered. Prithu Maharaj, he's coming from his avatar, he's coming from Krishna. He's descending in different types of avatar there. Leela avatar, Guna avatar, Shaktivesh avatar, Vishnu avatar. Avatar means ones who descends. He comes from that higher realm. He comes from the higher realm to this realm. So avatar, he's already coming from there. He's just visiting here. So looking first at the concept of Tattva, trying to understand the next part of this purport, Prabhupada talks about this particular topic, which is sometimes quite controversial, or has been. And all of us, this question arises, if I was in the spiritual world, if I was there living, then how did I come to be here? What is it that, you know, made me come here? Why did I come? If you go there and you never come back here, then this is a question we all ask, the Tatha Brahma Jigyas, who am I and where do I come from? So we want to find out the origin, and this topic is thrown around a lot. The best information one can receive on this in the Gaudiya, in our Gaudiya Vaishnava line, is coming from Jiva Goswami, Rupa Goswami, Bhaktivinoda Thakur. They give us sufficient information on this topic. So I wanted to look at the concept of discussed by the Goswamis, how in this material world there's three principal energies, and that is Swarup, or the energy of Krishna and Krishna's realm. And that Krishna and his realm means his dham, means his eternal associates, his companions, the nitya mukta souls that are there. And then another energy, three principal energies. Then another energy we look at is the jiva, or tatashta. It's in the tatashta platform, which means sometimes covered, sometimes uncovered. The tata on the river, Ganga, when she's down, there's an area which is exposed, big sandbanks, rice paddy. And then when she's flooded, it comes up to a certain area, even right in to touch the feet of Madhava sometimes. That's called the tatastha, tatastha. This marginal area in between, sometimes flooded, sometimes dry. And then we look at the Maya Shakti. These three particular tattvas Jiva Goswami discusses. So the Maya energy is the Bahuranga Shakti of Krishna, the external energy of Krishna. And the Antaranga Shakti, or Krishna's abode, himself, his companions, that's called Antaranga, is the internal potency of Krishna. And then us, in the category of Tatashta, then we're sometimes covered, sometimes uncovered. Sometimes we're in Maya, covered by the Bahuranga. Sometimes we're dry like that of the spiritual world. And sometimes the river Ganga, she's flooding, and we're covered by the Antaranga Shakti. We have a choice. We're influenced by both worlds. So this medium position of Tatashta is a very wonderful opportunity, because George Harrison said, all you need is love. The governing principle to this madhyam, or this place of choice in this human realm, in this earthly plane, we have a choice. And that choice we make in two ways, either out of love or by force. By love or by force. We're either forced by the material energy, the Bahuranga Shakti, external potency of Krishna, all the planets, all the astrology, it forces us along a path. Or we choose, out of love, to just surrender unto the internal potency of Krishna. And if we make that choice, then we attain the constitutional position of the soul. Because if we look at the constitutional position of the soul, as described in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Jivara Swarupoi, Krishna, Krishnara Tatastha Shakti, Veda Veda Prakash, Krishna Swarupoi, our Swarup, we're Tatastha. But our nature is, we're servants of Krishna. It's inherent in the soul. So our real nature is with Krishna. As a servant, our position is a servant. But nevertheless, he never takes away this independence. And that independence gives us a right to choose. And if we don't have that independence, there's no question of love. You know, I can't hold a gun and say, love me, Madan Mohan. Isn't it? I can't force somebody to love me. Love is a voluntary thing. So this individual choice is given to us. We have this free choice, and that's the wonderful freedom of being in the human form of life. So the more we are entangled in the Maya Shakti of these three particular energies, if we're entangled in the Maya Shakti, then to that degree, Krishna doesn't feature. If darkness is there, light won't, if darkness is so dense, light we won't be present. But if we invite light in, light is more powerful than darkness. If we invite the light in, that much we invite Krishna into our life, that much we choose the divine energy of Krishna, that much we surrender under the process of devotional service, that much we surrender, yes, with Vaidhi Bhakti, then that much Krishna, he's present and there's no darkness. If you just bring a candle into a small room, just a small piece of light, it illuminates all the darkness. Darkness can't prevail over the light. So the vastu of the jiva, the vastu of the soul, is he's part of Krishna. Just like a spark is part of the fire, he's part of Krishna. Vastu means the Sanatan Dham, the vastu of chili is hot. You can't change that. Whether you're Christian, whether you're Hindu or Muslim, chili is hot, isn't it? Or salt. It has a certain intrinsic quality, a particular nature, Sanatan Dham. So the nature of the jiva is he's a servant of Krishna. Jivara Swarapoi, Krishna Nitya Das. We're Nitya. Nitya servants, we're eternal servants of Krishna. But nevertheless, this choice is given to us because of the principle of love. The soul, it said, has an affinity with Krishna, with the divine consciousness. Because within us, we have this soul, Atma, and that is made up of Sat, Chit, and Ananda. Meaning, eternality, knowledge, and bliss. And this blissful seeking potency is within all of us. It's Ladini, it's called Ladini, Sat, Chit, Ananda, Ladini potency. It's a manifestation of Srimati Radharani, the pleasure-giving potency. She is the ultimate servant. So when she identifies, when we turn towards Krishna, Srimati Radharani identifies with the Ladini potency within our heart, and she becomes attracted. She's a supreme servant, and if you, she's very soft-hearted. If you are going to Krishna, then you have to go through first Lord Nityananda, isn't it? First through Guru also, Guru Tattva, Nityananda, same thing. And then we come to Srimati Radharani. Soft-hearted, she allows us to enter. She recognizes this pleasure-seeking potency within our heart. And she joins with that. She is part of that. And when Krishna, he becomes attracted to us because she is within our heart. He becomes attracted to Radharani, he's always attracted. So he's attracted to us. Krishna is attracted to us in that way. So that pleasure-seeking potency, we should take advantage of that and learn how to, if you like, repose that in the divine antaranga shakti, in the divine internal potency of Krishna. It means devotional life, the holy name, association of devotees. Isn't it? All these processes that are given to us by the Goswamis of Vrindavan. And the process of going under the, if we're to come under the Swarup Shakti of Krishna, the internal energy, if we're to go there, we have to pay a ticket. And there's sadhana, sadhana bhakti, that love is displayed by sadhana. So sadhana, sadhana means practice of devotional service. But it's given by the Goswami, in Nectar of Devotion, Nectar of Instruction, we're given much information that bhakti is also, can be divided into Vaidhi bhakti in our early stages of devotional life. And then it grows into Raganuga bhakti. So again, we see in Vaidhi Bhakti, we're being motivated by the principle of duty and fear and obligation. It's not such a high, although we have to go through that route, it's not such a high form of love, bhakti or sadhana. We're forcing ourselves. It's good, we need to do that to become free of this material energy. But we all have to come to the platform of bhakti, which is driven by love, is a higher principle. Just by the spontaneity arising in the heart, where we want to do something, free of rules and regulations. Of course, we can't jump to that place. We can't jump to the greed or lobha. But it will come if we practice under our acharyas and Srila Prabhupada, if we practice Vaidhi Bhakti in a healthy way, then gradually it'll come to us. It's inherent. It's our right. It's a rightful claim. So we should hanker anxiously for that time when we are motivated by love. And that principle of love, Raganuga Bhakti, then we have to enter into the Brajaloka. If you really want to find love, then we have to enter into the Brajaloka. The Brajaloka means the peoples that are living in Vrindavan. The people that are practicing higher realms of bhakti in the form of friendship, paternality, and conjugal love. We find in the Brajaloka is the name for those peoples living in Braj, the Brajabasis, where the spontaneousness is just overflowing. So we need to enter into the topics of the Brajaloka. We need to enter into the topics of Vrindavan. And Just like if you're lying down on a in a courtyard, in India there's many courtyards. If you lie down on a courtyard and look up, sometimes in India people fly kites. I've been across on the high-rise buildings with my son trying to fly the kite. You see these little paper kites in India, very beautiful and thin string. You can fly, you know, even like a kilometer up in the air, these little kites. So if you're lying in a courtyard and you're lying back, you'll sometimes see the kites flying. And then if you allow your eyes to go further, you'll also see the kites in the form of a bird. The bird is represents a perfected soul. If we look in the Vrajaloka, we can find examples in every type of the 12 primary rasas. We can have with Krishna, you can find examples in any one of those, isn't it? Particularly five, you know, parenthood, friendship, so many examples. So that's like the kites that are way above. We can read about their perfected repose, love with Krishna. And then we're like lying down, or we're down on the ground, and we fly our kite. We're like Chitashta Shakti. That's Swarup Shakti, or liberated souls. Liberated souls, they can be eternally liberated souls. That is also, that is Krishna's, called Krishna's Parakara, or Parasats. They're eternally liberated souls. Nitya means eternal. Nitya Siddha devotees, the eternal associates of Krishna. One can also attain Siddhi by sadhana, sadhana practice, by practice of sadhana. Or one, in a very rare circumstances, can get Kripa Siddha. Kripa Siddha means, Kripa means just the mercy of Krishna. And to a degree, all of us, by the grace of Srila Prabhupada, we got a lot of mercy of Krishna. But we still have to practice the sadhana, sadhana practice to attain Siddha. So sadhana Siddha, Kripa Siddha, and Nitya Siddha is there. So the kites flying, the birds, not the kite is also a name of a bird in India. So that kite away high is like the Nitya Siddha, eternally. There are examples in, throughout the scripture, in Krishna's Nitya Lila. So we observe them, and we're on the ground as Tatashta, and we might like to, there's personalities that are, like the kite represents a Vraja, paradigmatic individual, somebody who's an exemplary teacher. We have to find somebody who's an exemplary teacher. And we aspire, and the kite's aspiring to be like the bird. The bird is free, is spontaneous, there's no string, there's no attachment, there's no fear. There's no, it's not motivated by fear or obligation. There's no string attached. But we practice with Vaidhi Bhakti. And our goal is to fly like a bird. That should be the process as we go on in devotional life. So then I just wanted to touch on a topic that was quite an interesting realm. And that is, quite often it's disputed, the origin of the jiva. We hear this, some different teachers and gurus advocate different things, and it became quite a controversial issue. And young devotees, the American boys and girls, they even ask Prabhupada, where do we come from? And if we go back there, do we come here again? And Prabhupada said, you can't understand this matter. He said, just like the sun is going down on the horizon, we say, the sun is going down over towards Navadvip, over the Ganga. It goes down behind the trees there. Intellectually, but the sun never goes down. It's not an easy topic to understand from an intellectual point of view. But the concept of Nitya Bada, eternally conditioned souls, comes from the concept that at some particular point in time, we are turned away from Krishna. And when we turn away from Krishna, then that's called the false ego. I am not Nitya Nityanam. I'm not a servant of Krishna. Jivara Swarabhoi Krishna. I'm no longer a servant of Krishna. So that contamination of the false ego, ahankara, which is accompanied by I am and this is mine, ahanta and mamata, I am and this is mine. So when we get that, the first thing that enters is what's called linga. Linga stula means the subtle body. The subtle body becomes contaminated, our ego. And then we get a stula, stula form, gross form around that body. So we cease, according to our false ego or who we think we are and how we should enjoy, there are 8,400,000 species of life to accompany those desires. Incredible. So when we come to this world, the reason I say it's nitya bada or eternally conditioned, we know that God's not so cruel that actually He imposes that and there's no way out. But that situation is because there's no recorded time in history when the soul comes here. It takes place in the spiritual realm when there's no material time. So there's no record of time. And then we come through. So it's called nitya bada. But it's not eternally conditioned. And then those souls which go back to Krishna, you know, then practically when one goes there, one never returns, because if you have a bad experience, nitya mukta, if one has a bad experience in this world and you're able to find your way back home with Krishna, if you go to a city in the world, New York or England or even Calcutta, and you end up some side street where you get beaten and you get robbed and you get accosted by thugs and thieves, then you won't go back to that place again, isn't it? So under the chit potency, full knowledge, we have full knowledge in the spiritual world, we wouldn't return, isn't it? So nitya mukta means those souls who are there. Once they achieve that state, of course we're tatashta because the free choice of love. But most of the souls, three quarters of the living entities are with Krishna. This is the jailhouse. We have Devi Dham, Mahesh Dham, and Hari Dham. Only three dhams are in this material and spiritual world. Hari Dham means Brajaloka, Vrindavan. In Vaikuntha planets, even Kailash, Shiva's in that realm, and then as Shiva's Dham, and then Devi Dham here, Durga, she keeps us with the prison in this world. So it's no wonder we struggle, because we're in the prison house. We have to understand the realm we're in. We're not in Hari's abode. Therefore, everything else is going towards the material energy, is covered by Krishna's external energy. So I just touched on some topics there in terms of tattva. Now I want to just briefly have a look at some lila, with the concept of two rivers of lila and tattva coming together, and one can get some impetus for bhakti. So I wanted to have a look at some examples of kings who were perhaps come under the energy of external potency of Krishna, Bahuranga energy of Krishna. One time there was two, this is, goes back to the ninth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, there's two princesses, young girls, one is coming from a Kshatriya family, the other from a Brahmin family. And they were wandering in the beautiful countryside and celestial grounds and fruits and flowers smelling very nice. And lovely forest, and they came to a kund, or a lake, a bathing place, and like naturally they felt inclined to bathe in that place. So they discarded their clothes and they were bathing there. And in India, such a beautiful culture, the old culture, the woman would bathe separate and they wouldn't often wear clothes. Prabhupada indicates that special places for bathing for women. So like that, they were bathing. Lord Shiva comes along with Parvati, riding his Nandi. And all of a sudden, you know, Lord Shiva's Maheshwara, he's, you know, male, and Parvati's the mother. So they try to get their clothing. And there's Devayani and Shushmita, I think her name is. Anyway, somehow Devayani's clothing gets picked up by the other one. They get the clothes mixed up. And she, Shushmita, she actually picks up the clothes picks up the clothes of Devi Annie and puts on her dress. And then Devi Annie, she comes out and she's quite disturbed. But she, you know, it's confusion, trying to get the cloth on, and Lord Shiva's there. So she puts on the clothes, and she sees her clothes, it's not hers, and somebody else is wearing hers, so she becomes very upset. And then she starts to curse, because Shishmita is from a Kshatriya family. So Devi Annie comes from a Brahmin family, Sukracharya's daughter. So she curses, "You're just like a dog. You've taken, you know, just like a dog stealing ghee from the sacrificial yajna." And then Shishmita, she's a Kshatriya, she becomes a little bit more fired up also. They get angry. Ladies are like this in this world. And so they get angry, and she curses, "Well, you're just like a crow. You know, like a Kshatriya family, you come and you, a crow, you, the householders just throw pieces of foodstuffs to, isn't it?" Actually, Devyani curses Shishmita first, and the other way around, is cursing the Brahmin girl. He says, "You're just like a crow, because crows, householders just throw pieces," and then they get this whole fight going. And then she actually tears the clothes off her and throws, Shishmita throws her into the well. And she's there with no clothes inside this well. So when king comes along, Yayati, he's coming from Vedic times, he's a king, and he's looking for, in the forest, he's looking for foodstuffs, hunting like that, practicing martial arts. And he comes along and he looks in the well. Well, you know, men are captivated by the eyes, he said, women more by the ears. But so he becomes captivated. And of course, what does he do? He has to give shelter. He's asking, she's asking to get out. So he extends a hand, and she puts her hand there, and she touches the hand. And in India, if you touch the hand of a girl, is considered marriage. Big trouble. So, and she becomes attracted and says, "Now by providence, I'll take you as a husband. You're my husband." So he gets married, this Kshatriya gets married to a Brahmin girl, Devyani. And somehow it ends up, it's a long story, but she has an arrangement that by some other intrigue, that Shishmita is to be her maidservant. Wherever she gets married, she'll be a maidservant where she goes. And her father says to her, "You can be a maidservant in Devyani's household, but you can't never lie down on the bed with her husband, Yayati. Never beget any children," like that. So anyway, the king, like men with a Purusha Bhav, this is Leela of course, but the king, he can't help when so many maid servants in the palace or in the household, there were more women than men. So she wishes to beget a child as a maidservant. Although it was said she shouldn't cohabit with her, he actually begets a child, more than one, three children with her. And Devyani becomes very disturbed, because it was an agreement that they would never consummate. And so it goes on like that, there's some fighting. And anyway, King Ayati, he ends up in a situation, Devyani goes back to her father, Sukracharya. And Sukracharya, he curses Yayati. "You'll get old and invalid very fast. This will happen to you." So he ends up an invalid and old. But his desire, his sex desire, is still there. And he realizes that with his daughter, she'll also still have that propensity. So what to do? So he goes back and he pleads with Sukracharya and says, "What can you do?" And he says, "Well, if you find a young man who'll exchange his youth for your old age, then again you can get your youth." So he asked his son. He asked a few of his sons, and they didn't agree to that. And Prabhupada relates in the purport there that actually there's a time in life for everything. And the general path in Kali Yuga, most men need to get married. Or if from a previous life they're qualified, but in general If a man goes to the renounced order of life, having not gone through Grihastha life, then he may not fulfill propensities for sense gratification. And they are to be fulfilled in a youthful part of your life. If they're not fulfilled and one takes renunciation, then one may again revisit that place because of unfulfilled desires. So Sukracharya gives him his youth back, and then he actually enjoys for a long time with Devayani. There's much sensual enjoyment with his wife. Eventually he becomes disgusted with himself, and fire burns with, if you put the fuel, it'll keep burning more and more. So he becomes disgusted and he takes the Vanaprastha life and finally to Sannyas life. So Prabhupada said, in general, if a man goes through householder life and then enters the renounced order of life, then he's in a safer, more soft-hearted position to move on in the road of no return. Because we all have to take sannyas, whether you're male or female, whether you're married or... we all have to take sannyas. We all have to become fully fixed up in our love with Krishna. You can get dharma, artha and karma from one's wife, but you can't get prema. And moksha can also be given. Dharma, artha and karma can be achieved, but with one's wife, one can't achieve prema. One has to go outside that realm to find prema. Wife can assist in those other sub-religious, if you like. The transcendental platform of prema we can only achieve through becoming totally dedicated 100% to Krishna. So that was an example. Of course, he tells his wife in a story. He tells his wife about he-goat and she-goat. You can look at that. It's a very, quite a gross story, but it helps him become disentangled from this world. Then I'd like to look at, say, an example of a tattastha, somebody who's sometimes covered, somebody who's uncovered. So I wanted to look at Narad Muni. Narad Muni is considered like the sadhana siddha, even though he's coming in our Panchatattva, Srivas. His examples in his life where he's sometimes covered, sometimes uncovered. He attains spiritual life through sadhana, vaidni sadhana bhakti, sadhana. So one particular time in his life, he was flying over a kingdom and he saw many living entities, and they were all crippled and bent up and deformed. So he became interested. He went into that kingdom and he saw there was some personalities like that. And he said, "Who are you?" And he said, "We're the Ragas." We're the Ragas, which means personifications of sound, music. He said, "There's some sage that goes around the universe and he is singing wrong raga at the wrong time. Therefore we're all crippled up." So then he goes to Sarasvati and he learns correctly how to sing the right raga at the right time. He learns all different musical talents. And he can sing so nicely that one time he's singing in the house of his father, Lord Brahma. He's singing there and he's singing about the departure pastimes of Krishna from Vrindavan. Very, very moving, very, very emotional. And all the sages, Lord Shiva, Lord Brahma, Lord Vishnu, they're all there. And Narad Muni singing beautiful ragas in the right time that he was taught by Sarasvati. And his voice chokes up when Krishna is about to leave Vrindavan. He can't sing anymore. He goes to Asta Sattvic Bhav. And all the sages and demigods are also listening. And they curse him. They think, "We were being taken by you, we were transported by you." And then they curse him. "You'll marry 50 Apsara girls." So then Narad Muni has to go through this path with 50 Apsara girls. He has to go into marriage. Of course, we hear another story from Bhagavatam where he sings for the pleasure of girls, like movie songs is described, where it's not in focus with the yajna for Krishna. And so he cursed to take birth as a son of a maidservant. So he was covered. But then he chose in his next life, by the arrangement of sages that came in the Chatamas, he actually took shelter of them and their kata, Krishna kata. He took the remnants. We take the foot dust or the remnants of prasadam of a devotee, or we hear Krishna kata. So Sri Damanta Chattamasi heard Chattasloki Bhagavatam and he got an attraction for Krishna. And then his path begins as going back to the, from Upavarna, he goes back. His mother, by providence, she's bitten by a snake when she's milking the cow. And he's very intelligent as a young boy. He takes the body of his mother and he puts it inside the house, the straw house, and he sets fire to the house. Because he knows if they wake up and they just find her body, the village will say, let's take this young boy and he has no care. So everybody in the village thinks, he must be in there with his mother. He set fire to the house, he cremated her. So he left before the morning. Very intelligent. Then he went and he meditated, he attained darshan of Vishnu. So there's an example of somebody who's sometimes covered, sometimes uncovered. And I wanted to look finally at one personality who is actually exemplary and is, was covered. Of course, we see Prithu Maharaj, he was covered by the, he's a Nitya Mukta, eternally liberated. Hare Krishna. So, this particular personality, I'm sure you know, is Runti Dev. And he is an example who saw equally in the eyes of an Uttam Adhikari. He doesn't see any difference between the body. The body he saw difference, but soul he was able to see on the platform of equality. Maharaj Runti, he was an exemplary king, very famous for just accepting by providence whatever came to him. So he fasted at one period for, his family would suffer through that also. He only accepted like a python, whatever come. He wouldn't even beg, ask for foodstuffs. Of course he was a king, Runti Dev. But he fasted one time for 48 days, even without any foodstuffs. And then on the day of breaking the fast, there was a knock at the door, or somebody came. And if a guest comes, you have to feed him. So Runti Dev, he had to feed, and it was a Brahmin. So he felt, oh, I could feed that Brahmin. So he divided his foodstuffs in half. Then the test became even stronger. It wasn't a Brahmin the next time. It was a Sudra. So he was tested to see what is equality. And then he divided again his foodstuffs, practically not much left. And then again, after that, as a dog eater with his dogs. We all get tested in this world by Krishna, isn't it? A dog eater with his dogs, he only had a glass of water. One glass of water was left, and finally, a chandala comes. And he divides the glass of water. After 48 days of fasting, he gives shelter. And he makes one beautiful prayer in the line of a perfect king, Nitya Siddha. He says, I do not pray for the Supreme Personality of Godhead, for the eight perfections of mystic yoga, nor salvation from repeated birth and death. I only want to stay among the living entities and suffer all distresses on their behalf so that they may be free from suffering. This is the mood also of Vasudev Dutt, isn't it? Mukunda Dutt, Vasudev Dutt. So he took on, this is Paradukha Dukhi. We have to somehow take up the mood of Srimati Radharani and in this way want to, if you like, voluntarily perform sacrifice to relieve the suffering of the conditioned souls. You know, I have a lot of admiration for people in the Western world because they're fully surrendered to that process of Paradukha Dukhi, surrendering to voluntarily accepting austerities for delivering, you know, Australia, England, America. Anyone a long way from the Dham is fully so. I think we'll leave it there. Of course, there's another, just a quick example. Maharaj Sibi was also another famous soul. He was a king and he was sitting there, and into his arms came a pigeon. Sat on his lap and said, he had some conversation, I need shelter. And then a hawk came and bang landed into him. He was sitting there and the hawk said, you know, the pigeon is my rightful foodstuffs, jivo, jivasya, jivanam. And the pigeon said, give me shelter in the kingdom. You have to give me shelter. And the hawk sang, you give me shelter. My rightful foodstuff is the pigeon. Pigeon sang, you're the king. So what did he do? We have a famous story. He cut off the flesh. He started to cut the flesh of his body to the weight of the pigeon. So exemplary were the kings to give shelter. So Prithu Maharaj is in that category. And so Bhagavatam is full of wonderful examples like that. So I'd like to thank you for sharing with us and being tolerant and patient to hear my efforts at speaking about Krishna. Does anybody have any realizations or questions of their own they would like to ask? Srila Prabhupada ki. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.